20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your regular host, Tyler Grzegorek. Mike Wendlandt was unable to join us tonight, but I am joined by one of my newer teammates, Chris Schimmel. As always, you can find the podcast on at Pack-A-Day Podcast on Twitter, and myself, you can find me at Tyler_Grez. Chris, how's life?
Pretty good. Finally, three-day weekend. Long week of work, but overall, it's been good. How about you?
I'm good. You going anywhere for the long weekend?
I'm going to do absolutely nothing.
Hey, sometimes doing absolutely nothing is the best thing.
I know. It's awesome. Like last weekend, I did absolutely nothing, and it was awesome. So I want to repeat that again this weekend.
So I'm still discovering that recent grad life. I recently graduated from school back in December, and I honestly can tell you I had no idea how much time I spent doing school stuff. But now that I'm not doing school stuff, I just have so much extra time on my hands, I just don't know what to do with it sometimes. So doing nothing has become a frequent part of my life lately. And if, you know, so I'm trying to get more into the football research side of things and really get into some maybe data analytics and fantasy football, you know, how they build the spreadsheets out and projections and stuff like that. So do you have any projects that you're working on?
Well, I had a website called schimmelsports.com where I used to write a bunch of articles, and I really took a long hiatus from it. But now that I'm more solidified and all that, I want to start getting back into it. So this definitely when the preseason starts, I'm going to start writing some articles on that. So you can find that at schimmelsports.com. You'll see I haven't written anything on it in a long time, but I'm going to get back into it.
Yeah, same here. I haven't really been writing a lot lately. I kind of ramped it up closer to the draft. And this last month or so, I've been really lackadaisical about it. I've just been kind of moseying around Twitter and not really been super engaged on the article writing front and just in general. So I'm looking to get back into that myself. But today we are here to talk about this Packers offseason, because for the most part, it is over. There'll be a few moves here and there, a few small ones, but I think most of the big moves and the waves of free agency and trades and the draft, everything has kind of come, you know, to this point. And we're here, and I think the rosters are pretty much what they're going to be heading into the season. So without further ado, we've got this broken down and simply into two different categories, good moves and bad moves. And we were talking before we got onto the recording, and we do have some areas that we're going to slightly disagree or maybe majorly disagree. I guess we'll get into it here and we'll see, but let's just start with the good. Let's start people off with the good news and the good moves, and let's get everybody in a good mood. So, I'll just start out. You know, I think Goot did a great job of addressing roster holes. And if you want to kind of expand on that more.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, it's so incredibly difficult, if not downright impossible, to fill every single hole in one off season. So of course there's going to be some deficiencies. However, you have to see, you know, does the good outweigh the bad? And so of course my number one, no shock, is signing Adrian Amos at free safety.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned that Goot is just addressing deficiencies, and you're 100% right. It's nearly impossible to address every single deficiency, but somehow Gutekunst is finding ways to really solidify positions that were weak the year before. If we look back at 2018, he added Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson, Tremont Williams at the position, Bashad Breeland eventually, who we'll talk about later. He's really finding these positions that he's deeming as weak, and he's just going out and just simply addressing them. Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith this year at the edge position, drafting Rayshon Gary, signing Amos, drafting Darnell Savage. He's just going out, and he is just simply being aggressive and addressing the holes.
Exactly. You know, that's a huge difference, I think, between college and the pros. Is college, it's you're so dependent on just overall talent, while in the NFL, it's you want to attack your opponent's weaknesses is what it is. And he sees these weaknesses and says, you know, I'm sick and tired of this team getting exposed year after year at the same kind of things, you know, weak pass rush, secondary problems, and he's going to turn them into strengths. And so far these last 2 years, he's done a darn good job of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but be excited about this edge group. I think it's the group I'm most excited about. I ran a Twitter poll recently just to kind of get a gauge of the Packers fandom. I only got about 200 votes, but of those 200 votes, it was about 50% edge. So I think that's pretty telling as far as between the corners and the safeties and the running backs, what group you're most excited about, even wide receiver in that group. It's very, very easy to get excited about this group moving forward, considering the guy behind, you know, the defense and Mike Pettine. And what he's going to do with this group is just so exciting. And Mike Smith's press conference the other day, he said that there's going to be four outside linebackers on the field at one time. How could you not get excited about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, that's what I love about the NFL today. You know, if you go back and you watch football in like 1970s or even the 1980s, where you see defenses in the same formation, but now you see defenses in different formations that, you know, you've never seen before. And you're like, what are they doing here? And that's the whole point, is just to, you know, get in the offense's head and make them not know where the pressure is going to be coming from. So, yeah, four outside linebackers on the field at one time. It almost reminds me of Don Capers, a psycho package that they used to have. Something like that, really creative.
Speaking of the psycho package, when I played Madden, I always took the Packers defensive playbook because of the psycho package. I loved that formation, and I just loved what you could do out of it. And it's kind of funny that we're talking about that, because I believe it was like a 2-4-5 or something like that. And
well, I thought that, I think it almost, you only had one guy down on the ground.
No, you're right.
You just had like you had the nose tackle, and I think maybe a Mike Daniels, if he still got it, or Kenny Clark can be that guy, and then you have the four or five linebackers out there. So yeah, I think they could actually implement.
You're 100% right. I think it was a 1-5-5. So you're looking at one down lineman, your nose tackle, your five linebackers, and your five defensive backs. To think about the capabilities with this team, you know, the strength now at outside linebacker and the edge position, and the weakness at the inside linebacker position, that might actually be something that's beneficial if they can get a guy like a Preston Smith to stand up and go and, you know, drop back into coverage a little bit. Kyler Fackrell has stated desire to do the same thing. I don't see Za'Darius Smith being that kind of guy, but it doesn't mean he's not athletic enough to do it. So every now and then, I should say. I'm really looking at this group, and I'm getting excited just with the options that Mike Pettine's going to have in front of him. And it really saddens me that Josh Jones is requesting a trade, because I think he just adds to that versatility and what Mike Pettine could have done. And I think he's being a little impatient with that. It kind of sucks from his perspective, because they added two guys in front of him when he probably thought he was going to be a starter this year. But he just needs to suck it up and go out there and perform. And I think that those snaps will come to him.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and that's what really hurts, because he was the guy I think I said this last podcast, that he was the guy I was most excited for in that entire draft class, because I saw him as a big safety who can also play inside linebacker, just a versatile guy, kind of like, you know, just a Swiss Army knife. But, you know, he hasn't been playing well. They've kept him at safety. He's been getting burned. And I know, but at the end of the day, you have to go out and perform. And if you don't do that, then I don't see them keeping him around. And I can see the frustration from him, but at the end of the day, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, and here's the thing about Gutekunst, you know, since we're still on the incredible strides that he's made these last two off seasons to address the holes on the roster, the other thing that he's really kind of put his stamp on, he's not going to stand for this I before we attitude. You know, guys who are coming out and saying, you know, this is wrong, I need to get more playing time, like, the coach is wrong here, you know, I don't understand why this guy's doing this. Like, the guys who are doing that and being outspoken in the wrong ways, they don't last much longer on the team. Haha, Clinton Dix was shipped out midseason last year. It was kind of inevitable that he was going to be gone. And so, you know, to get a fourth round pick for him was fantastic. To turn that into the trade package for Darnell Savage, I believe. Anyway, the point is, you upgraded Haha Clinton Dix to Darnell Savage, who's like complete opposite of Haha Clinton Dix. and then Ty Montgomery, you know, the fumble against the Rams, it was...
Oh, you had to bring that
sorry,
up.
for him to come out after that play and to be out as spoken as he was, the way he was, Gutekunst showed no... He was like, you're gone. Like, you know, you don't get to go make a bad play and then go out there and complain and then... you know, we're not going to stand for that. And so I just don't know if Josh Jones is going to make it out of training camp. And that's a sad thing either. I'm looking at the safety group, though, and I'm still excited about it because I still believe in Raven Green as a backup caliber kind of guy. You know, maybe not excelling at any one thing, but just being good at a lot of different things, or like not bad at a lot of different things, just average. And I think that's...
Oh, yeah. And I think I read an article about Amos and Savage being able to both play both free and strong mm-hmm. safety. They can mix it up.
I think that Darnell Savage is going to be the guy that this defense looks to a lot more often than not. Maybe not this first year, but second year, third year, he's going to be the guy that this defense looks to as the playmaker. You know, I do not want to draw comparisons to Charles Woodson. I'm not doing that. But I think he can be that type of leader for this defense and the guy that they rely on and they depend on to make that big play when they need it.
Definitely. Now I'm going to flip it over to the other side of the ball, offense. Now this might take people by surprise, but I think one of the best moves that the Packers did was keeping Jimmy Graham for one more year.
Yeah, when we talk about tight ends, it's such a funny position. For most teams, it's a very unproductive position.
And that's the main reason why I'm glad they're bringing him back, is because they really don't have any playmaker behind him. And we can make an argument if he was even much of a playmaker last year. But I took a look at his first year in Seattle and then his second year in Seattle. He went from 605 receiving yards to 923, two touchdowns to six. So I hopefully that he makes a much bigger second year with the Packers. And that's what I think they're banking on. And then, of course, they got in the third round, getting a tight end who will probably replace him after the season's done. But I'm glad that they brought him back at least one more.
Yeah, you know, after looking at the landscape of the tight end free agency and what was going to be available in the draft, when, I'm really glad they brought him back and they didn't pigeonhole themselves into trading up for a Hockenson or taking a Fant at 12. You know, I'm really glad that they didn't pigeonhole themselves into doing that. And that was the strength of the whole draft period, was that they didn't pigeonhole themselves. They could have done whatever they wanted. And it really showed they addressed depth at many positions, including offensive line, which another one of Gutt's A-plus moves over the offseason is addressing that offensive line depth. There's still some question marks at right tackle, which we'll get into in a little bit. But the point is, I think that there's a good blend of future sight and present sight, if you will, with Gutt and the way he's building this roster. He understands where he needs to get better. He's looking into the future. He's addressing the problems for now, but also for the future. So there's just a good mix of that. And that's not something we really saw with Ted Thompson. It seemed like every move with him was a future-based move. And
you know, Ted Thompson, it was always a future based move, and Mike Sherman, I feel, is the opposite. It was a win. It was a now move. So Gutekunst, that feels like the perfect blend between the two.
Granted, it's only two off seasons, and we might be giving him like way too much credit because we can't even evaluate either draft class yet.
Well, we're excited. Yes, you know, we're exactly. excited. So
I do. This is, I'm a realist. I do got to look at it from the negative and the positive perspective, and I'm very excited right now. I think. I'm more excited to see this defense than I am the offense. And I honestly cannot remember the last time I saw that or said that. You know, last year I was incredibly excited to see the defense, and it was exciting at times. There were still moments of faltering and just of what it had looked like under Dom Capers. But I think for the first time in a long time, I'm legitimately excited to see this Packers defense more so than I am the offense. And I think this Packers defense could be top 10 this year.
Hopefully, the last time they've had a top 10 defense was when they won the Super Bowl. So hopefully they do. Now, would you want to keep going with the best? Do you have any more, or should we flip over and go to the worst move so far this offseason?
Yeah. Well, one more quick, you know, good move, okay. I guess, from Goody and the Packers. It's because I say the Packers because Murphy is involved as well. But bringing in a new offensive coordinator, I think you can lump a head coach in there as well. You know, the Mike McCarthy departure was imminent. But bringing in that new OC, we were talking offline about Joe Philbin and when he came back prior to last year, how we were excited because we're like, oh, McCarthy's finally going to allow somebody else to take over the offense and inject some new life into it, some creativity into it. And that just didn't happen.
Yep, nothing happened.
And I think definitely going to see a new offense. Like, there's no question about that.
Oh, yeah. Like they said, think of the 2011 Packers. Joe Philbin was the offensive coordinator, and he was the offensive coordinator when they won the Super Bowl. he's coming back in and really nothing happened. And so I really think hopefully that Matt LaFleur will actually give the offensive coordinator some freedom. I don't know if McCarthy really had the offensive coordinator on a short leash and just, you know, went off by himself, but I think this is overall a really good move to bring in a new offensive coordinator.
And I think one of the most positive aspects out of it that we've seen so far is the happiness of Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know if it's because he's got some new challenges that he has to meet. I don't know if it's because they brought back Luke Getsy, one of, you know, a guy that he's spoken highly of in the past. And I just, you can see it. It's been evident from day one, ever since they stepped back into the facility at the same time, Rodgers has just been happier. It's so easy to see. I mean, I could not have guessed a year ago that we'd be watching a Bucks playoff game and we would be talking about Aaron Rodgers chugging beers in a competition with David Bakhtiari, even though he clearly lost, trying to
chug a beer, because that was pretty bad.
But the fact is, he got on the big screen and he did it, and he looked like he was having a good time. And I think it's the first time in a long time we've really seen Aaron Rodgers having a good time.
And also, he went on Twitter calling up Bakhtiari saying, "Next time, let's do scotch."
Yeah. it's good. It's good fun, and it's good to see QB1 in a good light again, because it was a pretty dreary couple of years if you really want to get into it with 2016 and 2017. Mm-hmm. It's just pretty dark as far as the way we looked at Aaron Rodgers and talking about how mopey and sad he was. It's just really, really, really good to see him happy.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so now moving into the bad, I think we've had enough happiness for one podcast. There still is things to talk about and things to be concerned about. So, you know, we talked about how Gut addressed the offensive line depth. There's one part or one area of the line he did not address, and that's the future plan at right tackle. Now, I do want to put a disclaimer on this and say that he did a lot this offseason, and as we mentioned at the beginning of the pod, you can't do everything. And it just did not fall into place this year to address the future at right tackle. Now, that's a luxury. It really is. Most teams are like, we need to find a starting right tackle. The Packers are trying to find their future starting right tackle. That's such a luxury to have, and that just shows how the roster is being built. So Bulaga is going to be in place for at least one more year. How many games he plays, I guess we'll have to see. But I mean, I think his injuries are a little bit overrated and a little bit overblown. He's still been a relatively reliable tackle, even if injured and playing. So I'm excited to see him get on the field this year and what he looks like going into, I think, age 31. And then Billy Turner as well. It looks like he's slated to be the starting right guard going into training camp. So we'll see if Justin McCray can fight him for that spot. I don't see it happening, but we'll see. But Billy Turner could be the backup plan at right tackle. And most teams don't even have a backup plan at future starting right tackle. So it's a really good spot to have a problem at.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I don't know what else I can add to that. But yeah, overall, they're going to have to replace him. I don't know if they think, all right, we're going to probably bank on these guys this year, and then next year we'll be able to find a replacement. You know, kind of like I think what they did with wide receiver and other positions. They think, you know, we can't, you know, fill all the holes in one offseason, but we trust these guys this year, and we'll do right tackle next year. Hopefully it pays off.
Yeah, and I think it will, because I believe it's Bulaga's last year under contract. So no harm, no foul. He has a bad year from an injury standpoint, or, you know, his athleticism and his play falls off. Then you just let him go. And you know what? Likely he signs a contract with another team big enough to get a compensatory pick in return. I don't know what kind of compensatory pick, what degree, but, you know, I just...
Yeah. That's wishful thinking, hopefully.
It only takes about a $4 or $5 million a year contract to get compensatory picks now, regardless of the degree. So, you know, I just don't think that there's a huge risk there at the moment. Obviously, you're still looking for that future right tackle, but incredible luxury to have. Moving on to insurance at positions, the wide receiver position. This is under the bad category, because if Davante Adams, God forbid, gets hurt, then we're just... It's going to be a crap show at the position.
They're really real, and that's the thing. They don't have a real true number two wide receiver. I mean, they're really banking on not only Adams, but Geronimo Allison, you know, with Randall Cobb gone. Geronimo Allison, don't get me wrong, he got off to a hot start last year, but he's been inconsistent, and he's been hurt. So I'm always going to expect Allison to get hurt and miss a couple of good games. So that means they're putting even more on Davante Adams. So they're really banking on these young receivers to make a pretty solid leap. But do you think they're going to be able to do it?
I'm a big Equanimeous St. Brown fan, so I really think that he could take a step forward this year. I really like some of the things that we saw from him last year, and some of the pluses, even though last year was terrible in a lot of different ways, these young receivers got a lot of reps. Maybe not Jamon Moore, and that's sadly because he just was not up to par with ESB and MVS as far as a development standpoint and being ready for game days. But even on some of his limited special team snaps, you can see Jamon Moore, effort's not a question. You know, it's not about that. It's just simply getting his head right. I think the talent's there. I posted a clip the other day of one of my favorite Tim Boyle throws, and it was to Jamon Moore, and it was dropped right in the bucket. You know, no strides lost from Jamon Moore, and he dropped it. And it was in a preseason game, but I mean, that kind of plagued his season moving forward because he wasn't able to get on the field in front of ESB or MVS or Devontae Adams.
Yeah, he's had trouble with, you know, with drops going back to college, and that was exactly. a huge knock on him going in. But overall, I'm really going to be watching them like crazy in the preseason to see if they really do make these jumps, because they're all from a body standpoint very similar. They're tall, they're athletic, but do you really think it's great to have wide receivers with very, very similar characteristics and not as much variety?
Well, I think that's what the tight ends are going to be used for.
Okay.
So I think, you know, Mercedes Lewis, he brings some value to the team from the tight end position as a blocker. I think he's capable. He definitely is capable, I should say, of slipping out every now and then and just being that domineering force on the outside and being a receiver down the field. Jimmy Graham, he was in position to succeed a lot last year. He just couldn't.
When he got hurt and when he broke his thumb, I think that really is what set him off.
I think with a lot of these receivers, you know, MVS, ESB, Devontae Adams, Jimmy Graham, maybe not Mercedes Lewis so much, but with those first four that I mentioned, Rodgers trusts them. And they may not have been making the plays last year, but we've seen the level of Rodgers' trust and how it can affect these receivers' play from game to game and year to year. I think with a full offseason with these guys, you know, with Devontae Adams working with them, with a new offense that will allow LaFleur and now Hackett to come in and kind of see what these guys can offer and move them around these formations and put them in positions to even further succeed than even more so than MVS was and ESB was and Devontae Adams in the career year he had. I'm just excited for the group in general. I know that there's a lot of concern about the lack of depth, but I think Geronimo Allison can be good. I don't think they re-sign him to a long-term deal unless he goes out and blows everybody out of the water.
I know, he just needs to stay healthy. That's just the biggest thing with him.
But as far as these guys all having a similar skill set, I still think that there are unique things that they can do. I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I think he's a guy who can stretch the field for you. Devontae Adams can do anything you want. He's not necessarily a burner, but he's gonna win vertically because of his technique.
His route running ability is second to none.
Yeah, and nobody's going to press him. So what do you do when you're not being pressed? You work underneath. So that's going to be very easy for Devontae Adams to do because he's so good after the catch as well. I'm just excited for this offense in general. I think Equanimeous St. Brown is going to take a big leap this year. I've been a believer in him since I saw him at Notre Dame. There were reports that he was soft at Notre Dame, but I didn't really see that. You know, maybe he's not the guy who's going to go up and win vertical jump balls, but you don't need that type of guy in every player on your team. You know, there's a guy, Alan Lazard, is on the team. If he shows up in training camp at preseason, he's a different body type that they don't have. Maybe he can find his way onto the roster. But I think that's why guys like Jay Kumerow are going to be on the outside looking in when we're talking about the final roster here in a few months. There's just too many of the same type of guy. And I think on the back end of the roster is where you would use to fill in those guys who are a little bit different, like an Alan Lazard. You know, I've kind of floated around the idea of a Michael Crabtree as a guy you could bring in, but I'm not super, super high on it because he's been hurt. And he had a good year last year, actually, for Baltimore. I mean, he had a couple drops here and there, but he's been relatively good. I think he's a guy that you could throw on the back end of your roster with these other four young guys or three young guys, and you could say, all right, these are our six guys. We got Adams, Crabtree, Allison, MSB, ESB, MVS, and Jamon Moore. And I think you roll into the season with that, something like that. But I just, I just don't know what they do outside of adding another veteran guy like that. I just think that the six receivers might be on the team already.
Yeah, like that's why I didn't expect them to get a wide receiver in free agency. I was expecting them to get someone in the draft, possibly second, third, or fourth round. That's where I was expecting them to get.
I just don't think that they fell the way that they wanted them to.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I thought they could have drafted wide receiver Paris Campbell out of Ohio State, but
I would have been in love the second with that
round. See, you would have loved that move. See, they could have got, because if you take a look at the history of the Packers with wide receivers in the draft, they're all second, third round picks. You know, Greg Jennings, second round, Jordy Nelson, second round, James Jones, second round, Randall Cobb, second round. You know, and that, so I always thought that they're going to get a good wide receiver in the second round, but they didn't do it.
Well, you know, that just shows how confident that they might be, considering how we talked about Gutspen willing to address roster holes. He must not view wide receiver as a roster hole. They let Randall Cobb walk, which shows even further his confidence in these young guys right now. And maybe it's a little bit of a, you know, my inaugural class bias, but I believe in this group. I don't know if Jamon Moore is going to be able to put it together. I think he has the athleticism and the talent to do so. If he can get mentally right, I think he's going to be a good receiver. I think he could be a Geronimo Allison type. Maybe not quite as vertically efficient. I think Geronimo Allison's a little bit quicker than he is as far as that goes, or a little bit more speed, top-end speed. But I just think that the six receivers might actually be on the team already, and if they do bring somebody in, then that means that they're not feeling good about it.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple more things. We're talking a lot about the wide receivers. A couple more things. At the corner position, letting Bashaud Breeland walk.
Yes, I had him because my two biggest questions. Will Josh Jackson step up and have a big year in year two? Will Kevin King stay healthy and stay on the field? And then lastly, Tremont Williams, I think he's on his last legs. I don't think he has much left to offer. So that's why I thought they should bring back Breeland.
I completely agree that they should have added another veteran corner. I do think that I actually don't even know where Breeland signed, but whoever signed him, it was like $8 million. I think it might have been the Chiefs, but
yeah.
So it was like $8 million a year or something like that, wasn't it? It was a lot of money. That's all I know, and it was way too much that I was willing to pay.
Yeah, but it should have been letting Breeland walk and then not even trying to replace him. I think is the mistake, because Josh Jackson, he's going to have to step up. He struggled his rookie year, but I have not lost faith in him at all. And then Kevin King, when he's on the field, he's good. He's a very, very sound tackler. He's a great athlete. He just needs to learn to stay healthy. And then once like I said before, Tremont Williams, I think his biggest asset is his mind to help teach these young guys, because he really is on his last legs. And I don't see him even being on the team after this year.
Well, I think he always signed a 2-year deal before last year, so I think this is his last year. But I completely agree. I mean, athletically, he's old. I think he's, what, 36 or something like that? Maybe even older. And he should be a back-end guy that you don't have to play unless it's an emergency. I personally was not the biggest fan of Josh Jackson coming out of Iowa. I thought there were some legitimate concerns with his ability to play in man coverage. I thought he was strictly a zone cover kind of guy. A guy that had to keep the play in front of him and make plays that way. You know, they're saying that he came into these offseason workouts, he's bulked up a little bit. You know, he looks good physically.
Yeah, because he didn't have the fastest 40-yard speed, but he was known for, you know, his strong physicality. Right. And that got him into some trouble, though, last season with a lot of flags. So he's going to have to get faster and not rely on brute strength like he's been doing.
Well, I'm not sure if he gets to get faster, per se, rather than just quicker. You know, more fluid in the hips and just, but I do still think that his best ability is as a off man corner. And I think that with guys like Jair Alexander and Kevin King, who I love when he's on the field, with guys like that, you could man up there. And if you want to play Josh Jackson off a little bit, put somebody else underneath them, play a little combo man zone coverage, I think that that's your best way of utilizing their talents to the best of their ability. But, you know, obviously I'm not a freaking NFL defensive coordinator, so I'll let Patton figure that out. But, you know, speaking of the defense, though, and who they could play at inside linebacker, they didn't add another veteran there. You know, again, inside linebacker really goes unaddressed after another offseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, not adding an inside linebacker is huge. And don't, and I don't count drafting Tyler Summers. Okay. That guy's going to be special teams. And, you know, Oren Burks did not have a good season. And then with Josh Jones wanting to leave, I think that's also going to hurt him at inside linebacker. Now, I love Blake Martinez. I hate people ripping on Blake Martinez. I think he's probably their best inside linebacker since Nick Barnett. And I think that he is a overall a really great player, and he needs to have a great partner. But, you know, Jake Ryan, of course, gone. They're really going to have a veteran in there, I feel. And they didn't address it in the draft at all either, so...
You know, and to be fair, in the draft, it didn't really fall. I've never been a guy to advocate spending a top 15 pick on a linebacker unless they're generational. So
well, that exactly. AJ Hawk has scared the hell out of me to, you know, draft a linebacker, inside linebacker in the first round. But, you know, like I thoroughly thought, you know, in the middle rounds, they try to get somebody. The Packers have been known not to really give high draft picks to inside linebackers. But at the same time, they haven't had studs. You know, sideline to sideline inside linebackers in a long time.
Well, here my problem with the Packers and their lack of addressing the inside linebacker position, they're, you know, if you look at their historical tendencies as far as what they like at the position, they're pretty strict. There's not a lot of guys who meet them. And I think we're going to have to see a changing of the guard as far as what they look for athletically, mentally, whatever you want to call it.
And I think that, well, you know, new head coach, new GM still, I think, what do you think? Do you think that they're going to start branching out a little bit, or do you think it's been same old when it comes to inside linebacker?
Well, we've seen 2 years and we've still seen a lack of addressing the position. I mean, they did take Oren Burks in the third. That's a pretty significant investment in a player, but, you know, maybe it was just a bad pick and maybe they do recognize the deficiency, but they're not willing to give up on Oren Burks yet. You know, he was hurt a lot last year. He was a rookie. He was kind of thrust into the position when Jake Ryan went down with that ACL injury. I don't think they planned on him playing as much as he had to play last year. So,
and that there is exactly why I'm going to swing this back to one of the best choices. That was signing Adrian Amos, because had they not signed him and they got Darnell Savage, Savage is going to have a huge role. And that's why I think getting Amos was so big. But yeah, with Jake Ryan getting hurt, that thrusted Oren Burks in, and I don't think he was ready.
Well, you know, I think Darnell Savage is actually ready for a big role. You know, I don't want to put too much stock in offseason workout comments and interviews and stuff like that. But when Tremont Williams came out this past week and said and gave his comments about Darnell Savage, that spoke a lot to me. He, you know, talking about how intelligent this kid was before they even stepped on the football field, that just speaks so much to me, considering who it was coming from.
And the fact that he's asking for more.
Exactly.
You know, it's huge.
I'm excited to see what this group can do. I'm excited for the secondary, even more so than I was last year after drafting Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson. And I didn't think that was possible. But adding Darnell Savage this year, I think I said it on the Cheesehead TV, the draft show when we did it on Friday, the second round. And I said that Darnell Savage and Jair Alexander were going to be the best of friends right away. These two are going to become—they're going to become the Bass Bros in the secondary, and I'm excited to see what they do.
I love that.
So they're going—I'm excited to see what they're going to do in the secondary, because I think that they're just going to click so well, and I think that they're similar in mindset, and that mindset is one of a more aggressive ball hawking. That's my ball. You have to take it from me. Type mentality that this defense has lacked for a long time, and it's starting to get that under Mike Pettine, and it missed it for so long under Don Capers.
Oh, yeah, because look at the greatest defenses in NFL history. Think of the Steelers of the 70s, the Raiders of the 70s, the Bears of the 80s, Lawrence Taylor and the Giants. What do they all have in common? They're mean, physical defenses, and that's what this Packers team needs.
It's just going to be so much fun watching this front, we'll say front five, you know, with Rayshon Gary, Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, if he's still around and he doesn't get traded, which I don't think he will. But, you know, those three with Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, and just the way that Pettine moves them around to get pressure with your ball-hawking safeties on the back end, you know, your safety valve and Adrian Amos, Jair Alexander blanketing guys like Brandon Cook so that they can't get beat deep. Like, I'm excited. There's a lot of different things I like at a lot of different levels. Inside linebacker is the area where I have the least excitement, but I have a lot of expectations for Oren Burks to really take that year two step, because there's going to be a lot put on him. I think he's a smart guy. I think he gets that. I think he knows that. You know, it's kind of funny that he played safety also at Vanderbilt before switching to inside linebacker. He's got some good coverage skills. He can really be that really good complement to Blake Martinez if he can put it all together. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm excited to see what this defense can do. As much as they didn't address certain positions, there's still a lot to be excited about.
Definitely.
So I think with that, we have talked long enough about this offseason. I'm personally ready to keep up the hype for the season moving forward. I think it might be getting time to really talking about what to look for in the 2019 season and enough of the reflections and more of the projections. So I'm signing off. This is Tyler Grzegorek again with the Pack a Day podcast. I'm joined again today by Chris Schimmel. You can find me at Tyler_Grez on Twitter. You can find the podcast at Pack a Day Podcast on Twitter. And you can find Chris where?
Chris, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Schimmel.
Thanks again for joining the Pack a Day Podcast. And until next time, go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.
Chant to Wild. Covers in the end zone in a Lambeau leap to the north end zone stands. The Packers have a 6-0 lead. Beathard on third down and 3 in the shotgun. Packers showing a blitz, and here they come. Beathard looking, hit as he throws it deep down the right sideline, and it is intercepted on the play. Spectacular interception by Kevin King at the 9-yard line of Green Bay. Snap to Rodgers, looking right. Throws the right side. St. Brown makes the tackle. Sage straight out. Oh, he reached back to gather it in, using all 6'5 of his frame. Tumble out of bounds. Inside the 30 of the 28-yard line. Hunter Bradley the snap. J.K. Scott down on one knee. Arm extended. Here it is. Placement made. Kick is up. It is good. Yes. Good. Mason Crosby delivers a dagger. One week after his worst day ever, he delivers the dagger tonight. Third and 5, 13-yard line of Atlanta. Snap, Ryan looks right, throws right side. Intercepted to the house, Bishop Freeland. Touchdown, Green Bay Packers. 19-yard interception return, and it's 16-7 Packers. Rodgers looks it over. Takes the snap. Blitz on. They pick it up. Lost
they
the
got
side.
Him. They got him.
10-5. End zone. Touchdown. Touchdown. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. 40-yard. Single back offense behind Aaron Rodgers, who ducks it under center. From the 29 of Green Bay, and here's the handoff up the middle. Big hole. Straight ahead. It is Aaron Jones. Off to the races. To the 20. To the 15. To the 10. Down the left sidelines. And he's out of bounds. Inside the 10 of the 5-yard line of Miami. Aaron Jones with a burst, 67 yards. Third and 6, trailing 30-23, 2 minutes straight up to go in the game. San Francisco showing a blitz through the A-gap, and here they come. Rodgers looking, throws left side of the end zone.
Yes!
Touchdown!
Yes!
Devontae Adams, left corner in the end zone from Aaron Rodgers. 16-yard touchdown pass. The Packers an extra point away from getting this game tied.